Reeves time. A month ago, we thought the National League wild card, that the Padres and Diamondbacks were clear, and that the rest of it was kind of jammed up. Well, now it looks like either the Mets or Braves, but maybe the Diamondbacks and the Padres are falling back a little, and it's 4-3, and it will be a fascinating 3 weeks, and a lot happens in 3 weeks, especially with the pressure of meaningful games.
You lived it.
Absolutely. I mean, you tend to think, and we talk about this all the time, the postseason is, oh, it's not always the best team, it's the hottest team, right? Well, when you're coming down the stretch in September, you can be that hottest team. And I mean, I was 2015 Mets. We were the hottest team in the, you know, once we made those trades at the deadline, we became one of the best teams in baseball. We were hot and we rode that all the way to the World Series. That's something that you can look at from any of these teams' perspective and say, if we can get hot, we can be that team.
Can I throw in one thing?
Of course.
It's funny you brought it up, Rick, is this team reminds me so much of the 15 team,
yep,
which was like the 22 team was stacked, and then a lot was thought of the 23 team, which was among the most disappointing in the sport. So there was this going into this year, you know, David Stearns like didn't spend the big money in the offseason. He put pieces together, and slowly I think it's the best kind of thing, like the Knicks recently or the football Giants 2 years ago, where the team, where the fans suddenly go, oh, our team is good. Mm-hmm. This is fun. And you could see the energy building in the stadium. The Mets played a game against the Red Sox the other night, Wednesday night. I thought it was their most complete game of the year.
Crowd was going bonkers.
But that was their most complete series.
Yes,
but yes.
They just, like, I'm going to make up a word. They were out-competent of the other team. They just did everything well. Like, the Red Sox, I watched them run wild against the Yankees. The Mets would not let that happen. They kept cutting off balls in the gap. Two by Nimmo, one by Bader that was vital in the eighth inning, not giving them 90 feet. Shutting down running games. Pitching great out of the bullpen. Terrific at-bats in the first inning to jump, you know, the Red Sox starter before he had his stuff. And then against Jansen in the ninth, there were five walks, three with the bases loaded. They are playing as complete as you can play, like those 15 Mets did. As the season went along, you just said, oh, this is a different team from April and May and June. This is the current version of the Mets. The Nationals were favored. The Mets won. The Braves were favored to outlast the Mets. The Braves are the Mets' devil.
Yes, they
can
are.
The Mets outdo their
exercise
devil?
Exercise.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, September the 8th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And, of course, I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. We come to you just after the Mets complete a 5-1 homestand. Disappointing loss here on a Sunday, 3-1 of the Reds. Albeit the Mets with a great homestand, 9 in a row. Until the ninth inning, they hadn't been behind in a game in over a week, which is amazing. And now the drive to finish the deal, to finish the quest to make the playoffs, begins in earnest tomorrow on Monday with a series in Toronto, a bunch of games with the Phillies coming up, obviously big games against the Braves and the Brewers, and of course a second division Nats during the next homestand. You know, a little bit to talk about. We're going to get into, obviously, the vibes around this team, because I think that that's something that everyone's starting to talk about, feeling a little bit like it's 2015, or they're starting to feel that this team, and we talked about the Mets mojo a couple of weeks ago, so we'll get into that. Francisco Lindor finally had his on-base streak snapped. He's still having an MVP season. We've talked about that. We'll get a little into that, but more importantly, where is this season standing up overall in Mets history? Because that conversation came up this week, so we'll get into that. And then, unfortunately, the yolk still continues to rear its head. You know it's not going to go away until you kill it, till you win a championship. Jeff McNeil, unfortunately, breaking his hand. Weird, because it would have been a great opportunity for Brett Beatty if he wasn't injured. He's out for the rest of the year. Maybe if the Mets make a deep run in the postseason, you'll see him again. I still find that unlikely. McNeil's season is over. Where are we at with McNeil? We've talked a lot about him, so we'll round out the show talking about Jeff McNeil. But first, let's get into it right away. Now, 5-1 homestand. The Mets have 19 games left to play here. Currently tied with the Braves for the final wild card spot. A smidge behind in the loss column, a game behind the loss column to Arizona, two to San Diego. Right now, late afternoon here on this Sunday, obviously the Padres and the D-backs playing later today. With the homestand, with the quality homestand beating the Red Sox and the Reds, and I would have taken 4-2. They went 5-1. And of course, everybody's feeling blue because, hey, it very easily was about six outs away from being 6-0. But I looked at today's game, like I said, as one of those law of averages, kind of regression to the mean. Eventually, something was going to happen. I mean, the Mets against the Red Sox have gotten so many big double plays, big relief outings, big hits, going all the way back to when they had that horrible loss when Diaz blew this save against the Diamondbacks about a week and a half ago. Everything has kind of come up the Mets' way. And eventually, that's not going to happen. You're not going to win every game, and you're not going to continue to play at a 9 out of 10 pace. But if you look at the rest of the year, the Mets now, surprisingly, and nobody could have predicted this, have an outside shot, I think, at winning 90 ball games. I mean, look, playing about 500, 10-9 puts them at 88 victories. And I think that might do it. It's not going to be easy. That might do it. Arizona's got some challenging games. They're playing San Diego to wrap up the year. You know, maybe those teams can get beat up a little bit with their competition that they're playing. The Mets have a much harder schedule than everybody else. I mean, the Braves and even San Diego have an easier schedule, but the Mets and the Diamondbacks don't. But as you've been seeing, you just don't know. And if the Mets, and I think Carlos Mendoza continues to impress, and I know that that's been a conversation, but just what he said on Friday after the big win with the Vientos walk-off home run, we control what we could control. If we go out, we play our game, we execute, we win, it doesn't matter what the Braves do, it doesn't matter what the Diamondbacks do, it doesn't matter what the Padres do. But logically, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about vibes and mojo, things that we can't measure, things that are very anecdotal, about as anecdotal as they could be. And I said this is going to come down to Mets mojo versus Braves pitching. And at that point, I didn't feel, with the way the Padres and the Diamondbacks were playing, that the Mets could get back into it. Now, I didn't anticipate the Mets going on a 9-game winning streak, which washed away maybe a couple of the bad losses they had on the road trip and even things out a little bit and put them in a position where they're right there with those teams. But I said logic says the Braves, even with all their injuries, have the better pitching. They have the better bullpen. They have the better starting staff. And it's interesting because putting the Mets bullpen, and I know they're the reason they lost today. It was an off day for Phil Maton. The Mets rotation, the starting rotation, is actually top 10 in baseball since August 1st. Not as good as the Braves, not as good as the Astros, but it's up there. And I think that that's a big part of why they're winning and why they've been successful and why they've been able to turn this thing around. So maybe I shouldn't say it's Mets mojo versus Braves pitching 100%, but I think the Braves have the ace. The Braves have, when you line them up one for one, the better staff, the bullpen better. It's been more clean all year, and we still could talk about the walks, although those have been mitigated. Walks, yeah, hit batsman was the problem today, but to a certain degree, walks have not been as big of an issue in the recent, obviously, the winning streak. Ironically, you don't walk batters, you don't put runners on, you win. Who would have thunk that, right? But, you know, the Mets haven't been that bad. But you have to admit that this homestand in particular, the fans are starting to feel, the fans are starting to believe this team, almost from the jump when they came home after they beat the White Sox, after they finished that road trip 7-3 and really took care of business. You got a feeling that they knew this homestand was critical for them, that they had an opportunity against teams. The Red Sox are not a pushover, neither were the Reds, but they're teams you should beat. And they came out, they got the job done. The fans were into it. It seemed like they were embracing the pressure. They were making big plays. And, you know, it's not the first time you've heard the media bring up 2015. And recently on X, it's a couple of clips have come up with some of those late season games against the Nats in particular from the 2015 Mets, giving me goosebumps watching a Curt Nieuwenhuis home run, watching a big save from Jiri's Familia, big hits by David Wright. It just brings back so many memories about that team and how they, when they caught the Nats, they went roaring and didn't stop past them and then held them off at the end. And then really, when you look at that team and you look at how the energy and the vibes of that team carry them past two teams in the postseason, the Dodgers and the Cubs, that were better than them, that on paper were better than them. I mean, think about that team, how their energy, their vibes brought them past Kershaw, brought them past Greinke. Both are, I mean, Greinke had an ERA of about 1.6 that year. Kershaw is a Hall of Fame pitcher. The Cubs, 100-win team. Arrieta, all that offense. They go out there and they blitz the Cubs and they sweep them a year before the Cubs win the World Series. And then we know Kansas City, who had a little bit of their energy and vibes of their own and were on a mission to overcome a disappointing finish the year before when they lost to the Giants in the Fall Classic. The Mets ran into a buzzsaw that was too much for even their vibes and good energy to overcome. That's another story for another day. And you're starting to see some of that. Now, it's not just all about vibes and energy. You have to execute. But at this point, I don't think you've felt this good about this team in a while. And I don't even know if you felt this good about this team during the 2022 season. And I am amazed because it hasn't felt like it. And that's the interesting part. But after you see over and over again how well the Mets have played since late May, about Memorial Day, early June, right around the time on this show that I said, hey, it's time to admit Lindor's not built for New York. Can you move him? Move Pete Alonso. Move J.D. Martinez. Just let's think about tearing this down. It's not going to work. You have a new president of baseball operations. You can't continue to go through this. You can't continue to run out the same guys who have been here, who have this anvil, this yoke, all these things. And it's amazing because similarly to that 2015 team that had Murphy and Wright and Duda and Darno, guys that either imported from another organization to come up through the Mets system or were through the Mets system, they had been through a lot of crap, but they embraced it and pushed through it and nearly won. And it's funny, this team, from the day that whole Dodgers fiasco went about, they're on a 100-win pace. I mean, they played more than half the season at a 100-win pace. So I'm starting to say to myself, is it just vibes and good energy, or are they really that good? I mean, because there is a lot of holes, or at the very least, not everybody has been consistent. That's the word I would use. I mean, Alvarez has had a down year offensively. Pete Alonso, we all know how frustrated we've been by him. McNeil has had two different versions. Lindor was a zero for 8 weeks. We didn't even see Vientos on the field for the first 6 weeks of the season. Nimmo's had an awful second half. Marte's not nearly the same player as he was a couple of years ago. Bader's had a good year, but you know he's a component player. And let's face it, J.D. Martinez hasn't really been the same offensive player here that he has been historically. And if you go to the pitching, Severino and Manaea and Quintana have been up and down here. And the same thing with the bullpen with Diaz and Garrett and guys like that. I mean, and let's also remember the scrap heap, as I wrote about over at Beyond the Mic, the Substack addition to this show. The scrap heap has been kind to the Mets. I mean, Torrens and Danny Young and Iglesias. I mean, where would they be without some of these guys? And when you look at, and you want to throw Pablo Reyes, who scored a run on a pinch running assignment about a week ago, and maybe you want to throw him in there. Alex Young, he's gotten some outs here. But when you talk about, you know, 4 to 5 players who were not even thought about at any point until they were brought up, and when they were brought up, probably just rolled your eyes and said, ah, okay, he'll be here for a couple of weeks. Playing the role that they're playing, and now with Iglesias in particular, going to be taking over the everyday second base job with the absence of McNeil. I mean, this has really been an incredible season. And they've played at this rate with truly a team effort, with truly the manager keeping everybody together, with these players not falling for the traps that the city brings with the media, not falling for the yoke, not embracing or letting the losing or the weight of failure that has happened in not only recent history, but probably for the last 30-plus years overwhelm them. And now you have a real opportunity to get into the tournament. And let's face it, with the way that Manai is pitching, with the way that Severino, and he pitched outstanding today, and who would argue with David Peterson? And David Peterson almost starting to show you, like, is there something there? I mean, everything that you could criticize Tylor Megill about with his lack of development, Peterson has done the opposite this year. And everyone's talking about putting Peterson in the bullpen come October if the Mets are in the postseason. I don't know about that. I might want to give him a start. I mean, maybe the metrics don't make you feel that he's as good as his results, but he's getting big outs. He's going out there and he's making pitches, inducing contact, ground balls, and getting double plays and getting big, he pitched huge against the Red Sox earlier this week on his birthday, missing a ton of bats. So you have the energy and the vibe, and you have to start to wonder, is there something here? Because all of us who watch sports know that teams start to ascend. When things start to really blend and go well, and I'm not saying every team that this happens to wins a championship, because only one team could win. But when teams do something and go on a run of some sorts, you start to see things blend and things just kind of, it's almost like you're starting to see the field in a different way. Everything is clicking. The mind, the body, everything is clicking. And you're starting to see that with the Mets. Very similarly, and I almost compare it a little bit to how this Knicks team this past spring, and they had a ton of injuries, more than, you know, just losing a Jeff McNeil. And some bullpen pieces like the Mets have. This Knicks team from pretty much when Randall went down around the end of January to when they lost Game 7 to Indiana, they just got better and better and better and better, and they started to play as a unit, and all the pieces started to fit into place, and nothing fazed them, and they made big plays, and they handled adversity, and right now you're seeing a lot of that with the Mets, and maybe Lindor is kind of like Jalen Brunson, if you really want to make a basketball reference. It's kind of interesting. But in any event, they have kind of rallied around his season, rallied around his lead. And here we are tied with the Braves with about 19 games remaining, 3 against Atlanta. And look, I think 10-9 puts them in a spot where they're in a good place. I think if they get to 90, which would be 12-7, which is not going to be easy. Not with the majority of these games on the road. I mean, you've got Toronto, you've got Philadelphia, you've got Atlanta, Milwaukee. These are all difficult places. Now, Philadelphia and Milwaukee might have things sewn up and not give a you-know-what. Milwaukee might be the team that will eventually determine who they face, which would be interesting. I would think if I'm Milwaukee, just on paper, would you rather face Chris Sale and the Braves or the Mets, depending if that's how it all falls down to? I'm not saying they're going to tank. I don't think it's easy for a big league club to tank, but that would be something. But you know that it's that time of the year. It's go time when we're talking baseball, and we're talking competitive baseball, and it's week one of the NFL season. So vibes and emotion are things that we don't like to talk about a lot here because they're anecdotal, like I said. And on paper, you still have to like the Braves' chances, even with all their injuries, because of their pitching, because of their bullpen. But things are really starting to fall into place, even with the bullpen. And if the Mets could get Nunez back and healthy, where he could actually pitch, I'm not saying back-to-back, or, you know, they're probably going to be in a situation where they're going to be careful with him, maybe pitch 2 out of every 5 days, similar to what you've seen with Buto, before he became a little bit more of a bullpen option. I mean, the bullpen is not in a bad place. And the biggest story to me on this homestand is the 100 miles an hour that Edwin Diaz all of a sudden reared back and showed against the Red Sox and then against Cincinnati on Friday. And even though he wasn't as dominant yesterday on back-to-back outings, again to a certain degree yesterday, if you have seen Diaz, who has been through the ringer, has been out for the year, obviously, came back, had that horrible May, which reminded you of 2019, and has been spotty up and down pretty much all year, where he shows glimpses of himself and then reverts back, has blown probably two seasons worth of games, has himself single-handedly put the Mets in a hole in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, if he was Diaz that you expected all year, the Mets are possibly contending or in a division lead with the Phillies. I mean, that's the amazing part. They were 17 games back of the Phillies. Goes to show you in this modern baseball with three wild cards and the way the game is, no lead is ever safe anymore. I mean, maybe it's the way the schedule is because you're playing a balanced schedule and you're playing everybody else. Maybe that's part of it. You're not playing each other all that as much as it used to be. But it goes to show you. But with Diaz now rounding into form, you know, the Mets have as good a shot as anybody to win a short series. What I saw from Manaea lately, what I see from Severino today, and I know it's the Reds, but they're not a horrible team. They got some hitters. I mean, they're obviously a second division club, but they've actually a little under index compared to their run differentiation if you look at them. And they have some key pitchers out. It would have been a different series if they had the Hunter Greens and some of the guys that the pitching, the young pitching that they have. If you could have that Diaz, the Diaz of 2022, or as close as you can have to that career season, well, these energies and vibes that we're talking about are going to get that much greater, because now the formula is in place. Severino and Manaea could get you into the seventh. Maybe Peterson could get you into the seventh, and you could mix and match. And by the way, if Kodai Senga could give you anything, maybe those piggyback starts, two or three inning stints, you might have to schedule him in. He may not be the guy that you could say, hey, we're going to call you when things get dicey. He's probably going to have to be planned a little bit in his outings, if there are outings for him to have late in the year, the last week of the season, into the postseason. Well, now you really have something. And long are forgotten are the Raleys and the Drew Smiths and the Diekmans and the failures and the injuries of that bullpen that had some promise early in the year and has really been the soft underbelly of this team. So to me, the best news is Diaz, because if that Diaz is available, you have three outs accounted for every day in the postseason. Because you're going to pitch every day. Now, you have to build him up to where he can feel good about going in two or three days in a row. It looks like right now they'll do three out of four, something that I was pining for earlier in the year. And I found it interesting that Diaz actually, when they asked about the velocity, says, well, you know, basically said it's go time. It's the time of the year where we, you know, we got to get it done. So there it is. Has he been pacing himself? Is that something that Diaz is doing? Because the velocity decline, which usually indicates a shoulder and elbow issue, some kind of health issue, really to me was the biggest story of the year, because and that led to maybe bad mechanics and command as he's searching for that, and that has led to some of the challenges that Diaz has had out of the bullpen. So maybe there's mojo and energy and vibes that can lead this team over the final 3 weeks, over the final 19 games. Tomorrow in Toronto it starts. Old friend Chris Bassitt will be taking the mound. Not going to be easy series. I know that the Blue Jays lost today to Atlanta, and they helped the Mets a little bit this weekend. But the Blue Jays are not a pushover, and then they go to Philadelphia. It will be interesting because I know the Phillies haven't been the same team as they were earlier in the year. And although they kind of have the division sewn up, not I wouldn't say yet. If you're a Phillies fan, you're probably saying, all right, let's keep an eye on the Braves and the Mets, because a bad run against the Mets in those seven games can make things interesting, at the very least. Unlikely that the Mets could come back. But hey, there's probably a lot of people in this audience that remember seven back with 17 to play, and the Mets are seven back with 19 to play. So anything could happen. And away we go. So we'll see where this critical road trip brings the Mets. They're currently tied for the final playoff spot. And based on everything that has happened, the bad losses, Diaz, injuries, inconsistent performance, all the things that have happened over the course, even since they turned it around around Memorial Day, you probably couldn't ask for a better position to be in if I listed all the challenges, the early season struggles, the record on Memorial Day. If I gave you all that in spring training, say, would you sign up now for tied for the last wild card spot in a good position to get one of those spots, four teams for three spots with 19 to play. I'm guessing most, even not all of you, would have signed up for it. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, where does Francisco Lindor's season, forget about the MVP, stand in terms of actually Mets history? Is it the best season in Mets history? Both sides of the ball? Where does it look like it's going? We talked a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago let's revisit it because now it's been picked up by the mainstream and there's more talk about that. I know that some people have brought up the 07 right season, Carlos Beltran's years, even at shortstop, Jose Reyes and the kind of seasons he's had, Mike Piazza, John Olerud, a lot of names from Mets history coming up. What is Lindor in the 2024 Lindor stand? We'll talk about that and more right after this.